Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
He's the man Talkers Magazine says is one of the most important talk show hosts in America.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
He's Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. My pleasure to continue to be with you, and you're going to be glad you hung out with me because we got Sally Pipes back on the show. Don't you just love that name? I love the way that sounds. Sally Pipes. When you hear that name, you know you're going to be talking to a cool lady. She's president and CEO of Pacific Research Institute and the author of the Top 10 Myths of American Healthcare. She is a healthcare public policy expert, ladies and gentlemen, and a member of our Brain Trust, and we're glad to have her back. Sally, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me back.
It's good to have you back, and congratulations on your book. And the Top 10 Myths of American Healthcare is very important, a very important book, because you cover the details. I mean, you get into the issues that people are facing right now, and you reveal the truth about them. And there's an awful lot of hyperbole and not quite so much truth going around in the debate these days, isn't there?
Well, absolutely. And the problem, I think, Jim, is that the mainstream media is just so in love with what the president is doing and wanting government to take over our healthcare system. And, you know, we have to get the message out to the American people about who are the uninsured. Socialized systems such as Canada has, where I'm from, you know, do not provide, you know, efficient care for everyone. They have ration care and long waiting lists.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we're spending 16% of our GDP on healthcare, you know, is it too much or is it too little? But if you get government in the game, it's going to go way down, and we're all going to wait and have rationed care.
That's what happens in Canada, isn't it?
Well, yes. You know, I'm from Canada. I became an American almost 3 years ago, but I worked as an economist at the Fraser Institute. And Canada spends 10% of its gross domestic product on health care, and that's because the government says that's what we can afford.
Mm-hmm.
But the demand for health care is so much greater that you have long waiting lists. The average wait in Canada today from seeing a primary care doctor to getting treatment by a specialist is 17.3 weeks. That's over 4 months.
Wow.
The Americans want to wait over 4 months to get an MRI, you know, over 2 months to have breast cancer surgery if you're a woman and you know you have breast cancer. And then you have 5 million out of 32 million. You know, Canada's a large landmass with few people. 5 million out of 32 million people, 17% of the population is waiting to get a primary care doctor, and we have 750,000 Canadians are on a waiting list to get some sort of a procedure, and 30,000 Canadians leave Canada every year and come to the United States and pay out of pocket for procedures because it's important to them. Canadians have an escape valve. Where are the best doctors in the world going to go, best doctors in America, and where are we as Americans going to go if we get a Canadian-style single-payer healthcare system, which I believe is where President Obama and several members of Congress want to take us.
I heard a lady speak, being interviewed the other day, and she had some kind of a brain cancer. And
from Canada.
And she was from Canada, and she came to the United States to get diagnosed. She couldn't get her. She knew she had a problem, but she didn't know what it was, and it was taking too long. So she came to the United States, spent her own money to get it diagnosed, took the diagnosis back to Canada. The American doctor said, "I will send this information to the authorities where you are, and I will make sure that they get on this and get you treated because you need surgery." She went back, and they put her on a long waiting list. Nobody had any influence to get her moved up. And she said, "If I wait, I'm going to die." And so she came back to America with her own money and had the surgery, and she's here to tell about it today. And she's convinced that she wouldn't have been if she had waited on the Canadian healthcare system.
Well, absolutely, because when government controls those dollars, they control when you're going to get your healthcare. And, you know, in the case of my mother, who was a senior, of course, in Vancouver, where I'm from, in June of 2005, when she thought she had colon cancer, her doctor said she didn't. I said, "You need to get a colonoscopy."
Yeah.
She called back, and she was told that at her age, she couldn't have a colonoscopy.
What?
in late November, when she was hemorrhaging and had lost 30 pounds, I took her to the emergency room at Vancouver General Hospital. She spent 2 days in the emergency room, 2 days in the transit lounge waiting to get a bed and a ward.
Wow.
She did get her colonoscopy, and she died 2 weeks later.
Oh,
so,
my.
So, you know, this is how you can control costs, by denying care. And, you know, when you hear when Sarah Palin talks about her death panels, I mean, I wouldn't go that far, but I would say the first people under Obama's plan and our move down the path with this public option will crowd out private insurance and leave us all in a Canadian health system. The first people to be hurt will be our seniors.
Well,
and then it goes backwards.
What a tragic story.
Like
I'm so sorry about your mother. But here's the thing. If you want to know how bad the argument is about this reform, is anytime the government talks about creating an entity that they support and that will create more competition, ladies and gentlemen, that just doesn't work. I mean, that's just preposterous. 22, stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 17-2. I'm Jim Blasingame. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for staying with me. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. We're glad you did that. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you for checking it out and using it to your advantage. We built it just for you. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Jim Blasingame. Having a great visit with our good friend Sally Pipes, a member of our Brain Trust. She is the president and CEO of Pacific Research Institute, the author of The Top 10 Myths of American Healthcare, A Citizen's Guide. That means it's written in plain English, ladies and gentlemen. Sally, let's go through some of your myths here. Government healthcare is more efficient. Why is that a myth?
Well, you know, does the government, Jim, provide anything more efficiently? Look at the post office, look at the DMV. And, you know, I think it's very interesting, in the president's 29th speech on healthcare reform on September 9th, when he spoke to Congress and the nation, he said he wants his healthcare plan would cost $900 billion over 10 years, and it would be deficit neutral. It would be deficit neutral.
No, and he wouldn't spend one more dime, that's what he said.
Of our money. No taxes, yeah. No, you know, only taxes would go up on those people earning over $250,000 a year. No tax increases for people like us, the middle class. But it was very interesting to me that he said half of those savings would come from eliminating fraud and abuse in Medicare and Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, isn't it interesting that where all the fraud and abuse is in two programs that are run by the government?
Completely run by the government, right.
So, you know.
And if he were really trying to be you know, genuine about his and sincere about his argument, he would solve those problems, larder back
first
those savings, and say, hey, guys, let's spend this money on health care.
Well, absolutely. And it doesn't matter whether the head of the Medicare Commission was in a Republican administration, such as Tom Scully and George W. Bush, or Clinton's chap, Mr. Verdasic. They all said, we cannot eliminate fraud and abuse. We don't have the money to do it. And, you know, Medicare only pays out claims. And the funny thing is that the claim payout is contracted out to a private contractor.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whereas the insurance industry, they have to build networks, they have to attract customers to their networks. They don't have a lot of fraud and abuse because the market does work, you know, and they have to advertise their product. And so, you know, if the president is talking about Medicare and Medicaid as the example, because under his public option, which would be a government insurance company competing against private insurers, I am sure the product will be priced cheaper, and people, particularly those people who get their coverage through their employer, if an employer is going to say, I'd rather pay an 8% payroll tax or a fine, and then people can get their insurance in the public option within an exchange, it'll be cheaper for me. And the Lewin Group has said that 119 million people will be moved off their employer-based insurance, which is first-dollar coverage, a lot of gold-plated plans, and into the public option. And so, you know, this is how Obama's going to get around saying, if you like your doctor, you like your insurance,
right,
you can keep it. You won't, because if
but
you push
keeps
you into this public plan, it
and
won't
he,
happen.
And he claims that that's creating competition, but how can a private entity compete with an entity that can print money?
Well, you're absolutely right. And determine what is an insurance plan, and the benefits, you know, with the guaranteed issue, meaning that an insurer can't discriminate based on your medical history. Community rating, saying that young people could not be charged a different rate than older people with conditions. All of this is going to crowd out private insurance. Then the government will find that the demand for health care is much more than they'd ever anticipated. Cost will be out of control. You'll have to do what Canada did.
Mm-hmm.
Set up a global budget. We're only going to spend 10% of GDP. We're all going to be suffering waiting lists and rationed care, just like people in Canada.
One of the big myths that you talk about in your book, which I think is huge, is 46 million Americans can't get health care. Now, here's what's interesting. That number doesn't seem to have changed over the last almost 20 years.
I remember back in
93 that the Clinton administration was talking about 40-something million Americans couldn't get health care. And our population has grown significantly.
Right. The number has changed, but our population has grown. And so when I heard Kathleen Sebelius last week on the news saying, we used to have 30 million Americans, you know, without health insurance. Now we have 46 million. But, you know, the population has grown. That percentage, an insured number, has been around 15% for years and years, as you say. But, you know, when you break it down, the number comes out from the Census Bureau. But it's important for people to know that just because you don't have health insurance doesn't mean you don't get health care. Everybody is entitled in this country to care. We have a federal law called EMTALA. You can turn up at an emergency room, community hospital, or community clinic, and you will get care.
Yep.
But the interesting thing is, out of that 46 million, you know, there are only about 8 to 9 million Americans who are chronically ill and without health insurance for 2 years or more. And those are the people that we need to take care of. But 14 million of them are people who are eligible for existing government programs, such as Medicaid,
right,
a program for low-income Americans, and SCHIP, and these people haven't signed up.
Or they're young people who think they're going to live forever and choose not to spend money that they're given on health care, or they're illegal immigrants. You've got to take the illegals out of that number, don't you?
Well, you do. 17 million of the people that are counted in that number are people earning over $50,000 a year. Two-thirds of them are young people, what I call the invincibles.
Mm-hmm.
Why should they spend $500 a month on an insurance plan when they want insurance to be insurance to cover a catastrophe? Because it's highly unlikely that they won't, you know, get sick. So they say, I'd rather spend that money on a monthly car payment. You have about 10 million illegals in that number as well. So it's very important that people know people aren't born 1 year, die 79.5 years later, and have never had health insurance nor health care.
That's right. Exactly. Hold on to that thought, Sally Pipes. Sally and I will be right back. Her book is called Top 10 Myths of American Healthcare, a Citizen's Guide. It's a very important book. I encourage you to check it out. Quick break, 10 till. We're going to be right back. Stay with me. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Sally Pipes, the author of The Top 10 Myths of American Healthcare. Sally, talk to us about your company, Pacific Research Institute, the website and the book.
Yes, the website is www.pacificresearch.org, and all of my op-eds and pieces that are in the Wall Street Journal and New York Post are all there. My book, The Top 10 Myths of American Healthcare, A Citizen's Guide, is available on Amazon.com. And, you know, it's written in a way that the man on the street, I call it Pitt's family, the person in the street, can understand, you know, the issues about health care and breaking down the myths that we hear all the time in the mainstream media. So PRI is a think tank, and health care is one of the very important issues that we focus on.
One of the things that I remind people about, Sally, is that I didn't just start talking about health care reform when Barack Obama became president. I've been covering this issue for ever since I've been doing my show for almost 12 years, long before anybody ever heard of Barack Obama or Nancy Pelosi being Speaker of the House. I was talking about this. I was encouraging healthcare reform along the lines of allowing small business owners to band together in associations and buy healthcare across state lines. I was encouraging people with you and with Grace Marie Turner and others. Other thought leaders in this area, I was encouraging politicians and America to make insurance portable, to make the tax advantages, take them away from employers who sort of wind up being able to hold employees hostage, especially if they have pre-existing conditions, and make those things portable by giving Americans tax credits to buy their own health care insurance. For years I've been saying Americans should be health care consumers, not just co-paying patients. And so this is not my first rodeo on this. And in my opinion, Sally, it's disingenuous to say that this is the only way to solve our healthcare situation, because so many people have fought these logical reforms over the years that they haven't allowed, in my opinion, if we'd allowed some of these to come into place over the last 10 years, we wouldn't be complaining about healthcare right now. A lot of these problems would have been solved.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, we all agree that the key goal is affordable, accessible, quality healthcare for all Americans. The question is, how do you do that? And you and I and Grace Marie and a number of people, we believe in patient-centered solutions, empowering doctors and patients, changing the tax code, making insurance portable, allowing people to buy it across state lines, getting states to reduce mandates that add 50% to the cost of the premium. But, you know, the other vision talks about increasing the role of government. And we don't have, you know, a competitive market in healthcare today, because 47% of our healthcare today is in the hands of government through all these programs, Medicare, right, Medicaid, SCHIP, the VA. And so, you know, during George W. Bush's presidency, you know, he did get health savings accounts approved as part of the Medical Modernization
Act, which is one of the best things that ever happened to health care reform.
Yeah, absolutely. And prices, you know, have gone down, and people are very satisfied, and they're getting annual checkups and things like that. So, you know, it's worked extremely well. I'm very worried that under Obama's plan, HSAs are going to go out the window, just like with the Medicare Advantage. I see that as a tremendous.
Let me give you an example of the disingenuousness of the other side of this debate. When HSAs were first formed, and the gentleman I'm trying to think of the guy's name that created that invented these things. I'll think of it in a minute.
Pat Rooney.
Pat Rooney. And there was another guy that I just can't say his name. Anyway, they were MSAs. They were medical savings accounts. And when they got passed in Congress, Ted Kennedy put an amendment in this thing that capped the number that could actually be sold.
Right, in the original medical savings account.
In other words, he grudgingly, the only way that he would not filibuster, I guess, I don't remember exactly, was if the number was capped. I mean, so how could finally they got changed from MSAs to HSAs with no cap, but that was a way of restricting something that actually is working now. And that's
right,
a disingenuous way to approach reform, in my opinion.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, Senator Kennedy, the late Senator Kennedy, who is a big proponent of Medicare for all.
Right.
And yet, you know, under the House bill, under these bills that are out there, you know, members of Congress and federal government employees are going to stay within the federal employees' health benefit plan, where there's no public option.
Sally,
there is competition.
I got to wrap it up, but I got a quick question for you. I need a yes or no answer. Will there be a health care reform bill this year?
No.
Wow. How about that? Hey, very interesting. Hey, Sally, thanks for being here. Good job today. We'll see you next time.
Thank you so much.
Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.